Chase Rolfson with Rubline Marketing.
This is Jeff Lindsay.
This is Michael Pitt.
Hey, everybody, it's John Dudley from Knock On TV.
Hey, guys, this is Jared Scheffler from Whitetail Adrenaline.
Hi, I'm Taylor Drury from Drury Outdoors.
Hey, this is Nick Munt from Bone Collector.
Hey, this is Melissa Buckman.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter Podcast.
Working Class Bow Hunter Podcast.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
You're listening to the Working Class Bow Hunter. That's right, this is a podcast for Billy Joe Lunchbucket, the working man, just like me and you. My name's Travis T-Bone Turner from the Bone Collector. Thank you for tuning in.
Nobody pushes the envelope like Working Class Bow Hunter.
It's really, really not that good.
It is episode number 205 of the Working Class Bowhunter Podcast. We are right here on a Friday night, I should just add, pre-warning, at 1600 Buckslayer Place, right in the Buckatorium, beautiful Sherrard, Illinois.
Who's thumping right now on the floor?
Who is thumping?
Is it Clint? Is it Clint's here?
What? Clint who?
Clint Casper's.
Clint Casper's in the house.
We almost forgot you were here.
I just had to get to that. I'm excited. He's here. I didn't think he was going to make it.
I wouldn't miss it.
I feel like that needed to be brought up right off the bat.
It did. And, you know, we are doing this on a Friday night, so pre-warning. But, dude, I am Steve.
Kurt's here.
Kurt.
Eric.
Do you want to say something, jackass?
Yeah. Eric, I'm here.
Okay, give a salute again. Doug.
I'm also here checking in.
Oh, what's up?
Man, it's a Friday podcast. It's not going good already.
And then we've got two ladies in the room.
Unmiked.
Unmiked, but it's okay.
Clint, thank you for making the long haul to the studio.
It's a pleasure.
Dude,
I'm happy to be here.
What do you think? What do you think about it?
Studio? Pretty much like sex in my mouth.
Sex in his mouth.
Sex in your mouth. Just a lot of hot, right, sweaty disappointment. Okay. Sounds good. Oh, maybe your experiences may vary, but you know what, dude? We're glad you're here in the Buckatorium. We could not be doing this podcast if it wasn't for our wonderful partners, starting with Elite Archery, great bows. Check out elitearchery.com. Scent Crusher, Scent Off, Game On. This is stuff you guys need to get before the season comes up, because it's coming up in like 8 months. HHA Sports, made in Wisconsin, Single Pin Nation. Rattler grips, you're going to need those on your bow when you want your bow to stand out, especially if you're doing 3D and you're hanging a bunch up. Smith's Custom Meats and Deer Processing, we just heard he had how many deer?
1,016
deer. Good Lord.
1,016.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wow.
Wonder how
hats
much time.
Off to him.
It's a small operation, too. Which
hats
is,
up. Wow.
He's still processing deer. Like right at it's right now it's 8:30 on a Friday. He's cutting deer right now.
Yeah. Ethics Archery.
Crazy.
Big shout out to Haas. Congratulations to him.
They won the best company podcast.
They did.
For 2017.
Check out Ethics Archery, your new partner
awesome.
Of the show. And this show really could not be possible without Manta Coolers.
That's right.
Check out Manta Coolers. Dude, they're worth checking out. All I got to say about that. But we need to handle some business before we can move on.
Okay, hammer it.
I got a vet shout out.
Do it.
Vet awesome. Shout out this week is going to be... The veteran's name is Justin Clayton. Justin's from the Army. Your good buddy Dalton Harmon wanted us to give a shout-out. So, Justin, number one, thank you for your service to this country. He's a retired staff sergeant. He recently bought his first bow, and we're looking forward to going out hunting this fall and Justin tagging his first deer. That'd be the shit. So, Justin, I hope you do, man. You served our country. You deserve it. Get out there. Go get it done. And if you don't get it done, man, hey, let us know how the experience is. Maybe we could do a podcast about it.
Thanks for your service, Justin. Appreciate it.
But check out, if you do have a vet shout-out, go to workingclassbowhunter.com in the contact form. It's brought to you by Heroes Hunting. If you want a vet shouted out, dude, send it in. They don't have to hunt or anything. If you just want, we love our vets. We really do. Workingclassbowhunter.com, the contact form. Vet shout out. You'll have all the branches. You can leave a little personal message.
By the way, if you don't like our veteran shout out, there's the Liberal Working Class Bowhunter podcast.
They're
a one off copy of what we're trying to do. That might be more your style. They don't have any sponsors, and they don't shout out veterans that serve their free help us with our freedom for this country.
You know what's going to be what's cool about the Liberal podcast is we praise Russia until a president comes along that doesn't represent us. Then we hate Russia. I don't know how that happens, but I just wanted to throw that out there. Anyway, moving on.
Yeah, let's move on from that.
Dude, Clint Casper. He's sitting right next to me.
He's waiting. Look at him. He's
fine at the bit.
He's like, drop your panties. Hold on to your hats. It's about to get weird.
Who the hell wears hat and panties at the same time?
I figure, because I'm classy.
I figure if you're down to your skivvies, you're not going to be wearing a hat, but...
You wear a backwards hat if you're a badass.
Came in so hot.
That's a good point.
Yeah, came in real hot, man. That was extremely
large. I was just about to say, he's like a firecracker ready to go off, and he went off.
There it is. So
Clint brought 150-inch set of sheds, 170-inch this is a Friday Night Podcast.
Oh, my God. Sponsored by Bush Light.
We got to watch the mic peeking, boys.
Good Lord,
I'm trying to
Clint.
Conversate. We got three sets of giant sheds in here is what I'm trying to say. Man, this is a Friday Night Podcast. I'm going to apologize right now. It's bad. It's bad. I'm
waiting for
Steve's actually not going off the rails yet.
Yeah, it's weird. I know.
He's taming himself.
You're doing good. I am. I'm trying to because I got to rile this shit show up because unlike you, I get to go home and sleep in my own house and I don't have to have Clint in my house. I don't know what that's going to turn into. I don't think you guys are getting sleep tonight.
I think that you're going to end up sleeping with Clint tonight is what's going to happen.
Actually, I feel like Danielle's probably going to sleep with Steve, and I'll probably end up sleeping with the cat. With that has thumbs, by the way, which is really cool.
Yeah, that was...
Well, I don't know what that means, but...
touche.
Hey.
You know that Ron White skit? His dog is like, I don't have fucking thumbs. Come on, take me to the doctor. I don't have any thumbs.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Where do we start?
Here's what I'm doing. I'm going to transfer it. We meant to catch up with Clint. With our busy schedule, we haven't got to do this yet. On your buck that you killed late season.
Yes. Yeah, I remember that. You killed that during ATA?
It was ATA weekend,
yeah,
wasn't it?
It was
Saturday.
Clint was supposed to come with us to ATA. But what, like, go ahead and just tell that story because your foot was all fucked up.
I think Danielle stabbed him in the foot is what I'm thinking now. I've met these two.
No, it was back in November. It was like right in the middle of the rut. Easton, my son, he drops this glass. I thought I got it all cleaned up. Go walking across my kitchen floor, and I'm like, oh, you know, shit. I'm like, I stepped on something, and it didn't dawn on me. I'm just like, you know, I, like, brushed it off.
Whatever.
It's whatever, because I'm like, oh, you know what I mean? I swept and swept and swept, and I'm like, ah, oh, it's not glass. Like, it's, you know.
Right.
Didn't hurt for a few days, and then all of a sudden, it just started throbbing, and I'm like, oh, I got glass. You know, I'm like, it's got to be glass. So then, long story short, I get the glass out, and I'm like, all right, we're good to go. There was one little sliver. And I'm like, okay, we're fine. Month goes by, it's still hurting. So I'm using Epsom salt, I'm doing Neosporin, I'm doing whole nine yards trying to get this foot healed.
Diesel fuel.
Well, I should have done that and lit it on fire. It's probably what I should have done. I'm not quite as smart as you, so yeah. I didn't think of to do that.
That's right.
You don't need your foot.
No,
you don't need falling off the studio table, Steve.
So they gave you two of them.
It's been up there all night.
So we get into like December and January, and I'm like, well... You know, I got to do something about this foot. And it just so happens that I got to go during what was going to be, you know, right before ATA, get it looked at. They wanted to cut it open, see what was in there. So now I'm in the middle of ATA, deer season. It's just bad. It's all bad all the way around.
Not a good situation.
No, not a good situation. So it's like, okay, well...
It's hard to kick ass with one foot.
Well, and, I mean, the worst part was I'm still trying to get into trees and hunt, you know, and I've got this, my right foot that I can't really put pressure on because where the glass was, it was like right on like where like the ball of your foot would be. So every time you put any type of pressure at all, like you go, like, you know, I'm climbing up a ladder or tree steps, you put any pressure on it, and I mean, it's just excruciating pain like the whole way up your leg. So it's like, you know, I'm trying to, like, hop up and down 20-foot ladders all the time. And I'm like, well, you know, I don't want to get into shed season and get into, you know, into the spring and stuff and this still be going on. So I'm like, all right, well, I need to get something done with it. Well, it just so happens it's, like, right before ATA. And then, you know, I've got this – the buck I end up killing, the big six, I got him hitting. So it's like it's I'm flipping a coin like okay do you go to the ATA and say the heck with it we'll get something done with it later or do you get it done now and I'm trying to hunt this buck and it was like you know you're flip flopping around so it ends up that I don't go to the ATA and get this foot worked on which they actually didn't get fixed like still to, like just 3 days ago I went and got it. Yeah, I think it was 3 days ago. I went and got it looked at. And actually now, because there was a piece of glass in there, it's turned into a wart, planter's wart.
Ugh.
Because of the stress from the glass that was in there, it's caused a wart. So I got to go get that froze off here in the next – I got a call on Monday. And
you might as well just go have your foot cut off.
Oh, dude, it's – yeah.
Just cut it off.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you'll be
better. Do you get one of those cool bionic like
– bionic legs. Like yeah.
Right, right.
Fair
should
deal.
Do that.
Like Lieutenant Dan. Be the same thing.
Poor little Tink Tink.
Yeah.
A hero of mine, Lieutenant Dan.
Lieutenant
Dan. Get a wood stub. Man, you lucky.
He's got legs.
I'm trying to get my sea legs, but Lieutenant Dan, you ain't got no legs.
So it's still in your
got no legs.
It's still in your foot?
The glass is out.
Okay.
The piece that I got out, obviously I got out, and then they think there was another small sliver that ended up working its way out. But these plantar warts, they're caused from stress. It could be a puncture, like something sticks in your foot, like the glass.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just stress from me not putting all my pressure on it.
Or got some really bad news.
That's true, too. Mm-hmm. That's true. That's true as well.
Not going to ATA.
Not going.
So, in the middle of all this, you're not at ATA. Because, no. Dude, you'd have been miserable walking around. It would have been a disaster.
Yeah. Well, and it's so weird because, like, just to walk... At times, it like you know, there'd be days where it wouldn't be too bad, but then the next day, nothing changed. I didn't do anything different, but then the next day, it's like the minute you put any pressure on it, it's just it's just excruciating pain. But my doctor was telling me that with these plantar warts, is they've got like all these little, we'll call them roots, that come from the wart and go down in your foot, and they're like feelers. So depending on the day, those feelers can pick up like more sensitivity from one day to the next. So that's why on one day you could walk and be like, oh, it's not too bad. But then the next day it's like excruciating. Like I don't even want to walk on it type deal.
What the hell?
Yeah. So they're going to freeze it off and that'll totally get rid of it. I'll probably be
laid up for like two days right now.
Yeah.
Well, we could probably just do that. Yeah.
Do that, yeah.
Actually, when I went to the doctor the other day, she pulls out a scalpel and she's like, we're going to cut this thing in half. And I'm like, you're going to what? And she said, we're going to cut it in half. We're going to numb it, and then I'm going to scrape it down and see what's going on.
I need a 9-iron, an ice cube, and a knife, and it'll be good.
A blind kitten, a rape whistle, and some rubber bands, and we can do it.
Yeah, we're
so
good.
Then, so she does that. She cuts it, and, you know, she numbs it, cuts it in half, and she's like, oh, there's all these little red dots where the, we'll call them the roots, were growing down into your foot. She's like, this is a planter's wart, plain as day. So she pulls this mirror up in front of my foot so I can see it. And she's like, you see all these little red dots? And I'm like, yeah, I see them. She's like, that's... classic sign of a planter's wart.
Jeez. Yeah. I didn't even know this was a thing.
Yep.
Yeah, so, I think I've got one on my foot.
They're good.
Not cool.
Dude, if you have one, you need to get it froze off. Because they'll only get bigger, and they'll just continue to grow and grow and grow until you do something.
Well, Steve probably has like six of them, so he's fine.
No, I got the one on my left. I think that's what it is. It's like this lump that showed up. I'm like, what the hell is that?
Yep.
Everyone's like, man, I was hoping to hear about weight season killing from Clinton. Warts, man.
Planter's warts, bro.
Planter's warts.
Better than ass warts.
That's true. Butt warts.
Yeah.
Nobody likes a butt wart. So,
Gert, you're a butt wart.
In the middle of all of this foot situation, you make it happen on a big end. Let's talk about how big this deer is and maybe like the situation that you got him in.
Situation.
So, it's been, it'd be, let's see, it'd be 2015 was the first year that I kind of knew he was even around. Picked up a single shed from him. And on a farm that I hunt a lot, had no pictures of this buck. Didn't really know he existed, but found a shed. I'm like, oh, man, you know, it's a good one.
Still a same, a three-point side or what?
No, he was a big four-point side. And a lot of mass, you know, big main beam. So in my head, I'm thinking, all right, you know, this is going to be a buck to hunt this year.
Right.
So... that would have been the fall of 2015. Hunted that farm probably, I don't know, quite a bit early season. And it was all standing corn, so it's a farm that we actually lease. And it was so wet, we didn't get any of standing corn off till it was like late into December.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a hard farm to hunt. I mean, you know, they'd come right out of the bedding areas, go right into the standing corn. I mean, you had like a 5-yard window on the edge of
it kept him there. It sounds like you know.
No, it did. Yeah, it did keep him there.
Kept him alive, essentially. Yeah,
it was just hard to get in on him, you know. And I had a few pictures of him. he wasn't real frequent. I mean, I think he was hanging out there some, but I don't think that he was calling it really home.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was hanging out, you know, from time to time, maybe checking does and in the rut. A buddy of mine saw him, and I saw him once. But
and this is he was an 8-point at this time.
Yeah, just a big 8. Not real consistent. Probably, I'm going to say mid-30s, maybe 140. I mean, so – I mean,
a classic good Midwestern buck.
Yeah, big body. 4.5-year-old probably, maybe 5.5.
Nothing to base a whole year of podcasts off of at this
point. No. And then I ended up killing a real good one that year in December. A different farm had a stud showing up, so shot him late with my bow, and that was that. So then I'm thinking, okay, you know, I want to find this buck's sheds. So then the next year I found both his sheds, and I'm like, all right, now it's 2016. I'm like, well, this you know, this buck's going to be a stud.
Mana Cooler segment here, brought to you by Mana Cooler. Steve's getting into the old cooler.
Hey, he's dipping his paws into that.
Yeah. There's like 15 people in this room, and everyone wants a brewski. Kurt, you go for one?
I'm fine, thank you. I just figured you could do it a little quieter. But the perfect place to plug Mana.
Well, he's just trying to help Mana out. I mean,
he's like, look at me, cooler. I'm opening it.
I'm bam! Trying to. I did that because I grabbed one, and everyone's like, yeah.
Sorry, Clint.
Oh, no, you're good.
Continue.
So in 2016, hung some cameras and minerals, had soybeans on this farm, had like 35 acres of standing beans. So I kind of figured this buck would be hanging out there.
Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, you know, right off the rep in June, starts showing up, pictures all the time, summer velvet. I mean, he was all over that farm. Problem was, is I had, at the time and still to this day, was biggest, you know, extra. I mean, biggest buck of my life up to this point was also showing up on another one of my farms all the time.
A different farm from this deer?
Yeah, probably 1.5-2 miles down the road.
Oh, they basically knew each other.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah.
They were best friends.
Actually,
they sniffed each other's butts once.
Actually, where I killed extra, I have pictures of the buck, the big six I killed this year. So, I mean, you know, the way the crow flies, probably a mile.
They're familiar.
Yeah. But down the road, you're talking probably two. But realistically, oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, these bucks would have seen each other. I guarantee it.
Isn't it weird to think about, like, you know, you're going to have these deer mounted on the wall next to each other to be like, these guys probably hated each other.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
It's weird to think about, but it's kind of neat to think about
at the same
time.
Because they were both big, mature bucks, and both of them would have wanted to call this place mine.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be cool to see, like, how they interacted. But so, you know, so my mind was made up in the summer of 2016, okay, whichever buck is showing me a better pattern, that's who I'm going to hunt. That's just – it is what it is.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's going to lay it out a little better for you.
And it ended up being extra. I mean, and I shot him opening night. So he read the script perfect, and then – you know, it was funny. I killed him opening night, and it was cool because I'd never killed a buck the first night of season. But it also sucked because
it was over.
I took Jackson out that morning, so I hunted 2 hours with him, and then that night I hunted 1 hour and 45 minutes and killed extra. So I mean, you know, so I hunted, like, we're gonna round up, we're gonna say I hunted 4 hours, like,
and your season's good. Done
yeah, and that was it was done. Now it was cool because, you know, like I got to hunt with Jackson, and he killed he was 5 at the time, and he killed a buck with his crossbow. So it was cool to, like, have my tag filled and then get to hunt with him, because I mean, any deer that showed up,
right,
he was
right.
Like jacked. I mean, mm-hmm. Yearling walks out and he's like,
but now,
you know, yeah, so it was cool.
It's probably cool. Like, you can relax and, like, focus on Jackson now.
But,
like,
I wasn't relaxed though. Like, I was on pins and needles. Like, I'd be like, don't move. You know, I mean, it was like, right. You know, like, you're on. But yeah, so like the 2016 season comes and goes, and it's like, you know, I shot extra, but in my head, I'm still like, man, you know, I wonder what happened to that buck, you know?
Right.
So I pulled all the stands on that farm, and I totally left that farm alone. We didn't gun – like, I didn't let anyone gun hunt it, you know, like, even – you know, like, usually, like, my family, like, will gun hunt that farm. And told my dad, I'm like, man, I'm like, you know, I'm like, let's just let that farm go. Like,
Let it sit.
Did not find his sheds, and I was like, man, I'm like, you know, like, where'd this buck go? You know, I didn't find his sheds. But across the street, neighbor guy had standing corn, And he allows no shed hunting, no hunting at all.
What? Ooh. No shed hunting, just walking.
No, not well, he shed hunts. So. So he ended up finding this.
But does he hunt though? Does he hunt?
He shed hunts more than he actually deer hunts. He likes
interesting.
Yeah, he likes just to walk, and him and his dog walk, and he finds 30-40 sheds a year. He likes
perfect.
Just,
damn.
Know, yeah.
God, he likes, can't wait till that guy dies so his property comes up.
Yeah, no doubt.
He's a great hunting.
I average 2 sheds a year, and I've beaten that already this year.
See, so well, I'm hey, happy. You're way ahead of the game.
Uh huh.
You're in it to win it.
And it's just getting started right now. So, well, I don't know if that's fair to say.
Oh yeah,
I think so.
I mean, I've only been out a couple times. I still got a lot of deer holding. So
yeah, that's true.
But
so your dick neighbor.
Yeah. So I'm not allowed to shed hunt it.
I'm sure he's a great guy.
Not really, but yeah. So he ends up finding this buck's shed, so I get to see him, and I'm just like, man, you know, all right. So then this year rolls around, and I pick him up right away. On cameras and stuff, and we had corn and beans on that same farm, 30 in a row. We split it up, corn and beans, and he's in the beans like all June, July, getting pictures of him. Like, and he's just this giant six with a little kicker off his G2, but he's 23 wide. He's got big beams. He's got crazy mass, and I'm just like, you know, I've always wanted to shoot a big six.
Everyone does.
You know, it's just cool to be like, I mean, they're not going to score that well, but. On the wall, though, they just look so
massive.
Big. Yeah, they just look so massive. Big.
Well, our buddy Austin Chandler shot a big six this year.
Yes.
And I can't remember what his scored, but it was. We were trying
it
to.
It doesn't
talk,
matter.
Like,
it's a big six, man. That's incredible.
And I remember seeing that buck from Austin. That was a hell of a deer. That was a nice buck.
But my point of like bringing up score is if you were just talking to a guy that was into bow hunting, you're like, yeah, I shot a 125 inch. And he'd be like, you shot 120. Yeah, it's a 6-point.
It's a 6-point, exactly. Yeah.
And it's like, whoa, that's like 160 inch.
Exactly. If you can get close to Pope and Young on just a straight 6,
that's big.
Like, that's big.
It's a G1 and a G2 on each side.
You literally have 4 tines up in main beams, and that's it. Like, you know, as far as, you know, tines and beams go, I mean, that's all you got.
Yeah,
shot 125 inch spike. Sounds like an Impala.
Damn.
You like that?
That's tough. Well, that's tough.
That was reaching.
Nice.
That was a tough one.
Try again here in a bit, man. You're doing all right.
Do you want me to set the next couple plays out?
Yeah, come back later.
You're doing okay.
Yeah, whatever.
But yeah, you think on a 6-pointer, people don't realize, like, on a big 8-pointer, so if someone's like, yeah, I shot a 155-inch 8-pointer, that's a monster.
Gigantic.
You know, people don't realize a 10-pointer, you got more points. It sounds dumb when you lay it out, but when you look at a deer's frame, yeah, you can say, like, you look at your big 6-pointer and be like, oh, yeah, that deer is easily whatever you think it is, like 150s, 160s. But when you measure it, there's a G1 and there's a G2.
Yeah,
and that main beam point that you count, it's part of the main beam. So it's already been included in that main beam measurement.
Yep.
So you're not getting extra points for that last
count
as a 6-pointer.
Yeah.
And I think people don't realize that sometimes when you look at the deer as a whole.
No, absolutely.
So 125-inch 6-pointer.
That's big six.
It's a giant.
Yeah.
Huge.
I mean, I've always said if you can get over 115.
It's a giant.
As just a six. I mean, you're talking wide,
huge.
Good beams, mass, you know. And,
huge.
And I mean, and,
huge.
And going into the year, I had another buck that would have been, I'm going to say mid-50s, maybe low-60s, and as just a straight 10. But in my head, I'm thinking, I know that deer is going to score more, but that six, man, I mean, it's just, he was so old, and I knew he was going to be probably in that 7 to 8, somewhere in there, you know, based off of, I figured the sheds I had was like 5 and 6, and I didn't find them for 1 year. I thought that might have been 7, so I'm thinking this buck's at least 7.5, maybe 8.5.
Which is crazy.
And I'm just like, you know what? Like,
that's the buck that's always in the back of your mind.
Yeah.
You're always thinking about it.
Absolutely. Yep. And for me, it's like, you know, I love the chess match. More so than anything. I mean, like, everyone talks about, like, you know, it's
which explain why you're bumped for killing extra the first day, you know.
Well,
you didn't get to play the game.
Right, there. Right. And I mean, you know, and like a couple of my, you know, a couple of my really good buddies, you know, Adam Chaddock and Ryan Birch, you know, they were like, oh, dude, this is great. And when I made this comment, they looked at me like they wanted to hit me with a ball bat, but they sort of understood it, so they didn't. I made the comment like 2 days after I killed extra. I'm like, man, this is great. You know, to kill a 190s. Buck is
opening
a dream
day.
Come true. Opening
right.
day.
Opening day.
But in my head, I'm like, it's you're, over. Like, in Ohio, you got one buck tag. And I'm like, my season's over. And they're like, you know, they're flip. I mean, they literally wanted to hit me with their truck. They're like, why? How could you even say a statement like that? And I'm like, it's, I don't know. For me, it's just not like, oh, it's all about putting an arrow through him. I mean, yeah, that's the goal.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. But I love that chess match, though.
Well, like, yeah, because yeah, you sure. put all that time yeah. and effort in. It's like, dude, when you buy that, when we bought that Conor McGregor Jose Aldo fight, it was like,
oh,
I can't wait to see this fight. You know, yep. you want to see a fight. You want to see, and then what happens? 13 seconds in.
Yeah, exactly.
Aldo's going to sleep. It's like, what the hell, dude? Can I get my money back?
Yeah.
But the thing is, it'd be different if that happened all the time. You'd be like, damn, it happened again. I don't get to hunt this season. But right. it doesn't. It never happens.
But, I mean, how right. many people can say they went out opening day and said, okay, I shot a 190-inch deer? Or well, even a deer or a buck on opening day.
Yeah. No, that's the thing. The chances of doing that are
slim to none.
Yeah. And
very slim.
There's always been a couple dates in my head that I've always wanted to kill deer on. I've always wanted to kill an opening night buck. I've always wanted to kill a Halloween buck. I actually... it would have been 2000 and let's see, year after I graduated. It would have been the fall of 2007. I shot over the back of probably 140-inch 8 on Halloween night, and that still haunts me to this day because I've always wanted to kill a Halloween buck. I've always wanted to kill a buck on my birthday. I'm a rut baby, born November 6th, so that's
oh, you're November Valentine's
oh,
Day.
Oh, absolutely.
Valentine's Day, baby.
Yeah, yep, yeah.
That's right.
You know, always.
Dude, I'm 2 weeks after Valentine. I'm November 21st.
Oh, look
so
at you.
So my parents celebrated Valentine's
that's
Day
awesome.
A little late.
A little late.
Yeah, I'm in March, nothing special.
Yeah. I still love real. You, though. I mean, you're still the hottest guy here.
It's a fact.
Him?
What? That's a fact. It's a fact.
Steve's here.
Him?
It's science.
I'm not going to give Steve any credit.
How is he?
I'm not giving Steve any attention. My girlfriend has given him enough attention tonight. Yeah, I'm not going to give him any more. He doesn't need any more.
How is he the hottest guy here? He's not the one sweating right now.
Well, you're only sweating because you're hot.
That's right.
God, you're Zing. Despicable.
This got weird.
He's a thermometer to take my temperature, but anyway.
Yeah, we know where that's been.
We ain't talking about that.
Man, off the rails.
I told you I'd get off there, but I'm back on him now.
So you end up honing in on this deer. I'm kind of like cutting to it.
Yep.
And this was, I remember getting the text message in the car on the way home from ATA. And I'm
I remember that.
I'm like, yep. Clint got it done. Everyone's like, what? I'm
like, huh?
What? Clint killed a biggin. Oh, yeah. Fuck. Of course he did. Yeah. That's what everyone's right. Yeah, and we know he did. Like, no, he just did. Oh, yeah. But that's expected. He did.
It's like,
you called this pretty much. You and Austin Chandler called your deer this year, I feel like.
I hunted him early, and he's one of those bucks that he was so much fun to hunt because he humbled me all the time. I mean, you know, like in my head, I had pictures of him in September, and he was hard horned, and he's shown up in daylight, and I'm like, I'm gonna rock this buck's world the first week, like you're dead, like mm-hmm. you're screwing up, you're showing yourself in daylight, you're showing me, you know, like. The way my camera was placed, I could literally watch this buck basically get out of this thicket, get up from his bed, and walk into these beans. And I'm like,
the script was being written.
Oh, I'm just like, dude, like you are basically telling me, come kill me. So
you're fucking done, son.
Yeah, you're done, son. So I'm just like, I'm like you don't want to get. You know, I never get overconfident because there's been times where you get like sort of cocky and like, oh yeah, I got this buck, and then they literally come in and they just kick your ass, and then you feel like an idiot because you tell your buddies, oh dude, he's been showing up, I'm about to slam this buck, and then they're like, dude, it's been 3 weeks, what's up? Like, you know,
where's
I mean, like
up?
Yeah, exactly. Like, so in my head though, I'm thinking, all right, like I'm gonna get this buck killed, and he actually. I don't know why, but he changed up where he was bedding about the middle of September, and he started entering the field from a different he started entering this bean field from a different side. So in my head, I was thinking, okay, well, there's neighboring properties that butt up to this farm, so I figured it was neighbor pressure. I thought, okay, this buck's he's something's tipped him off. It's almost to be deer season, like, you know, people are hanging stands or cameras or people are in the woods. Something's going on.
Right.
So I'm like, all right. So now I'm spending my evenings glassing, you know, this field trying to, like, you know, pinpoint on different winds like I always do with these bucks. You know, I try to find what wind they like. And I'm going to bring this up because I think a lot of guys forget this. And a good buddy of mine, Adam Hayes, from Ohio like me, I mean, he taught me this years ago. Everybody wants to hunt a wind that's good for them. And what I mean by that is say you've got a bean field, and your dominant wind is out of the east, and that eastern wind blows from, you know, from let's say the woods to the field. So for a hunter going into that, that's a great wind. That's great. But a deer that's bedded off that field, that's a terrible wind, because that deer cannot wind anything that's actually out in front of him in that field.
Yeah, right. It doesn't work for him.
No, it does not right. work for him. Now, it works great for the guy hunting. Mm-hmm. And everybody wants to hunt a wind that's great for them.
Yep.
And what Adam taught me years ago, and I've picked up on this, and I still use it to this day, I call it hunt a killable wind. And what and a killable wind, in my opinion, is a wind that's good for that buck. So let's say the same scenario. You got this wind that's out of the east. That's good for you. That's realistically not good for him.
For the buck,
so the
right.
opposite would be good for him. Mm-hmm. Wind out of the west. Okay, now a wind out of the west lets that buck scent check that entire field. Mm-hmm. Well, what I found was is that this buck constantly would be in daylight on killable winds for him. So every time that there was a wind that was either out of the east or the north, this buck would be in this field before daylight. So now I'd totally change up stands and change up what I was doing, because it was a wind that he liked. Now, you know, I don't want to say that I'm super aggressive, but I like to push the envelope.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you're going to kill a big buck, you got to take risks.
Right.
During the rut, you can get lucky. But anyone that follows me knows, honestly, I've said this before, the rut's my least favorite time. I mean, I'm a pattern guy. I like patterns.
Yeah, and you can't pattern
no,
in the rut.
No, and in the rut, it's you jump
sporadic.
You jump in a funnel, or you jump on a field edge where a bunch of does are coming, and you hope for the best.
Mm-hmm.
I like early and late because it's patterns. And, you know, killable wins for a buck early and late, that's a deadly sin for them. I mean, you know, so I figured out, you know, kind of what this buck was doing. So I had an antelope tag still in Montana. So October 24th, I was leaving for Montana to go try to fill this antelope tag.
With Brian Barney, right?
With Brian Barney and my good buddy Dan Hever, another good buddy of Brian's. October 23rd, perfect wind. I got this wind coming out of the north. I had just rehung this set in a different tree. 5 o'clock. I see this buck coming, and I'm like, this is it. You know, I'm like, this tonight's the night. He's with another buck. They get out in the field. They're feeding towards me. And the whole time I'm thinking, you know, this is it. I'm going to kill this buck. Tomorrow I'm heading to Montana. I'm going to go kill a freaking antelope. Like, it's going to be the greatest week ever, you know. So they mess around in these beans, you know, and they're feeding, and they're working my way, but they're taking forever. Mm-hmm. I mean, absolutely. I mean, it is taking forever, you know. So there's probably 20 minutes of daylight left. And I remember he's at 57 yards, and he was slightly quartering to me. And I'm thinking in my head, like, you know, I know I can make this shot, but I'm like, I'm just going to see what happens. It's early. It's an iffy. You know, I mean, like, I know I can make it, but I'm thinking, dude, you
anything
got,
can happen.
Yeah, I'm looking at my watch. I'm like, you got probably 20 minutes. Let's, long story short, October 23rd, first night I see this buck in person out of a tree. He gets to me at 15 yards, feeding, facing me, and he literally never gives me a shot. He faces, he literally faces me the entire time.
That's tough.
So
it's enough to tempt you to make a poor decision.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
It is.
But what if I shot him head on and I got enough penetration? He'd run 15 yards and die.
Yep.
But then you know you kick yourself in the ass the rest of the year.
Yep.
If you shot him right in the front and you like he just runs away.
Yeah. Yep. And it's one of those deals where I'm sitting there like.
That's something that goes through a lot of hunters' heads.
Oh yeah. And I'll be honest. I mean, I'm trying every scenario. You know. I live and die by the statement of if a buck gives you the first opportunity, good opportunity a buck gives you, you better take it. And good opportunity as in a shot you're comfortable with. You know, I mean, some guys, I mean, I'll admit, I mean, that if that deer had been at 37 instead of 57, quartering to me a little bit.
It'd been a lot different.
I'm smoking that buck.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I'm not even going to think about it. But – 57 yards, a lot can happen. There's a lot that can happen at 57 yards.
A deer can duck underneath 20 arrows at 60 yards.
Easily.
You know, it's amazing. I shot at one good buck at 50 yards, and he was slightly quartering away. I have it on film. And I'm had no idea I was there. I shot, and he ducked so hard. He ducked a foot and a half.
Yep.
I hit him high shoulder, and I marked a dot on the screen where my arrow hit and then reversed it, and I would have smoke showed him, like heart shot all day, and it's just...
But he ducked that bad.
It ducked bad.
Yep.
And that's a learning experience. I know if there's a mature, any deer really, at 50 yards, you hold low, hold heart. And if he
heart
ducks,
or nothing.
If he
double lung.
If he ducks, you double lung.
Double lung.
If he doesn't,
yeah,
you heart
shoot
him.
Under him or you shoot under him.
Yeah. And, yep. And you're fine. So that's up to the hunter to know the deer's movement and the deer's body language, whether or not you're going to make that shot or not. And that's what makes it so tough. That's what makes bow hunting hard. A deer rarely is going to duck a bullet. And that's what the beauty of working class bow hunters, why we're so dedicated to bow hunting, because anyone can really pull a trigger for the most part.
That's right.
But that's what makes bow hunting so difficult, is you get tempted with a shit like this. And
but me personally, I wouldn't take a shot at 50 yards. I don't care if it's a doe or not. I mean, that's just,
it depends,
just me.
Though. It depends, yeah.
I know I can make that shot, but I don't want to take the chance of me kicking myself in the ass saying either I made a bad shot or I missed, because I'm going to kick myself in the ass no matter what happens.
A feeding deer that has no idea there, that's in a stationary
Absolutely.
Position with his head down.
Perfect. That's your opportunity right there.
You can pull a 50-yard shot. Yep. If you can shoot 50 yards, you got practice at 70 and 80, and 50 seems like 20.
Right.
You know,
well, that's the thing is, you know, I shoot so much at 105, 110, 150. Not that I'm going to take those shots, but I hunt out west so much where – You
60
know,
yards is
a
common.
A 70, 80-yard shot at an elk or an antelope or a mule deer, I mean, dude, that's a pretty – I mean, if you get a broadside mule deer feeding in a basin and you're above him behind some rocks
– That's a common thing.
If you can't make that, you're really handicapping yourself. So I shoot at, you know, 105, 110, even 120, because if you can start to get good there, a 70-yard shot is like literally me shooting at 20. I mean,
what? How far was your antelope this year?
He was 57.
See, that's what I thought, because I'm going elk hunting this year, and I'm going to practice long shots just in case.
Oh, yeah,
and
absolutely.
Antelope is something that I want to do.
Yep.
And
small target.
I'll probably do that with my buddy Jeremy from Buckstorm out in South Dakota here in the next couple years. He's like, make sure you're good at 60-yard shots, man.
Oh, absolutely.
He's like, 60 yards is about all as close as you're going to get sometimes.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
So
I
he's
think
like,
Jeremy just became our new guide out there.
Oh, he's a stud. Him and Travis from Bucksform are just absolute studs.
Travis has a cool video of him killing a kitty, which you've killed a mountain lion, too.
Hardest hunt I've ever been on.
That's a dream hunt of mine.
We skipped past your 6-point, the full total kill, but we're on to more fun things here. They're all fun.
They're all
fun. It kind of leads into
it. Mountain lion's interesting because we've never done it, but...
Yeah, no, that is. That's a tough hunt.
Would you do it again, or is it kind of like a one-and-done thing for you?
When I did it, I said never again because...
It sucked.
I mean, anyone that reads my stuff or listens to me or follows me on social media, like, I don't sugarcoat shit. I mean, I give it black and white.
Yeah.
That mountain lion hunt, on about day three, I was really questioning, in plain words, why in the hell I wanted to go on a mountain lion hunt. I had a cracked rib. I split my head open. I'd been off a mule / horse 3 different times. I'm not used to riding 30 miles a day. I mean, I was chewing Tylenol like they were Skittles. I was popping pills like a pill head because literally, I mean, I was so sore. I would get in. We'd get back at, say, dark, so 5:30, 6 o'clock. By 7:30, I was out.
In New Mexico for this?
Yeah, it was New Mexico, yep. And, I mean, you cut dogs loose every day, 13 to 15 dogs. And every day they rotate dogs out, so you got fresh dogs. And, you know, you have to go guide it out there. You know, you can't – if you're a non-resident, you cannot mountain lion hunt.
You'd probably never kill one without dogs.
No. You know, guys – I mean, I hear people say all the time, oh, you could probably spot and stalk. No. Like
spot and stalk a
cat. Yeah, like I mean, like
that's what they do.
It was crazy.
Yeah,
like
the ultimate predator.
Well, I watched my house cat go around and jump on my ass. Last thing I'm gonna do, sneak up on a mountain.
Well, it was crazy. Like I mean,
you know,
like not to get off on a tangent, but just real quick. Like on day two, we picked up the lion. I ended up killing on day six. Picked his track up. On day two, we followed him 33 miles. On day three.
Damn.
On day three, that cat actually, after mile 15, was making a loop back.
To see what you were?
To see what we were. On day four, we were backtracking because that cat was on our tracks trying to figure out what the hell we were. So we were hunting him and then he was hunting us. Like, I mean, and honestly, like, like, it sounds so screwed up, but that's how it is. Like, they literally get curious because they're a cat and they start hunting you. So then you start playing this game of, oh shit.
What way are we actually going here?
Yeah, are we actually on him or is he on, like, what's happening?
And then that cat knows you're there the whole
time. Absolutely.
He knows you're there. When you're following him, he knows you're behind him.
The cat I killed was in he was treed. Treed, bayed, whatever you want to call it. He was in a tree four times and jumped before I ever actually got to see him. On the fifth time of this cat being in a tree, because what they'll do is they'll run up, they'll get a breather, catch their breath, let all the dogs get on the bottom of the tree, and they'll jump out. And when after they catch their wind, they'll jump out. And when they hit the ground, it's freaking haul ass. And they run for the steepest, nastiest rocks. I mean it. The stuff we were in, I mean, to this day, and I mean, I've hunted all over the West, but to this day, it was the nastiest, steepest. Like, you go to New Mexico and find the nastiest shit you can find, that's where lions are. I mean, they just, that's where they live.
How many dogs die during this thing? Because dogs got to fall off cliffs, like, fairly common, right, when they're chasing after cats?
The week that me and my buddy Cliff were there, no dogs died, but when I killed mine, there were three dogs that jumped on him and rolled down this cliff. Two of them broke legs, and one broke a – I forget if it was –
because those dogs live for that shit. That's all they do.
Oh, dude, like, you shoot a cat, and it falls. They latch on, and wherever the cat rolls and goes, they'll go. Like, I mean, it is the biggest, in plain words, excuse my French, clusterfuck you've ever seen in your life.
Oh,
like,
I bet.
I mean, I hit this cat perfect, and my guide was like, dude, you smoked him. He's dead. But when they jump out, they're still actually alive. So
right. The
dogs and everything will jump on them. And he dove off this big cliff. When he dove off this cliff, we had two dogs break legs, and we had a dog. I forget if he broke his back leg or broke his hip. But regardless, three dogs on that ordeal got hurt. Not dead, but got hurt. But, I mean, there's been times where my buddy that does the guiding for these lions, he's had cats go up in these rocks and the dogs get stuck in the rocks and they have to helicopter these nets down to save the dogs. One time he lost 10 dogs. Helicopters could not get to him. They got down in this cave and it was so steep and so rugged, no one could get to him. He literally had to let his dogs go.
Oh shit.
Those 10 dogs, he lost $30,000.
Cool.
Like these dogs, I mean, they're like couple grand a piece. I mean, like, they're not just like
they're
average.
Badasses.
Oh dude, so
that's
badass. Cuz
those dogs are on a mission. They only know one thing, and that's all to chase cats.
And that's fun to them. That's what they live for. Those dogs all they've known for fun.
Yep.
Well, our buddy Jack Vaccaro with Five Seasons, Chip City's filming and producing that show.
Yeah, yep.
And Jack and Chip and Dylan all went on a mountain lion hunt, I mean, I don't know, a few weeks ago in Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
And Jack got lucky and killed
one
the first day.
Snow hunt, yeah.
And he has footage of this cat on this weird shrub bush thing. I don't know the term for it because I don't know Western.
Oh, yeah. No, I know.
This mountain lion's
about.
On this thing and the dogs are around
probably
it.
Probably an aspen or something.
Yeah, it might have been. I could tell because of the way it was.
Oh, I was just about to say it.
This cat, Sam.
Isn't that neat?
My wife loved that one. You're welcome. This cat is just full of life, swipes at these dogs, and takes off along this cliff. And these dogs are running along the cliff. And all I could think about looking at that, I'm like, how many dogs fall off cliffs and just die?
Oh, yeah.
It has to happen all the time.
Oh, it does.
Dude, I remember watching dogs are an incredible animal. You know, it's weird that, you know, they came from wolves and they help like man hunt. Like, I was watching this documentary about rats, and dude, they had these like little dogs in England, and they're all like these little Yorkie terriers, and dude, they murder rats. Like, they go out to farms, and there's another video floating around where, dude, these dogs, that's all they live for is killing these rats. They don't eat them, they kill them. And like all the little dogs, you know, they look like the little ankle biters have like scars, and some are missing eyes.
I might be wrong on this, Clint. You might know. Is it wolves that hunt for fun?
Thrill hunters.
I think tigers do it. I might be completely wrong. I don't know. I actually know nothing about tigers. But
actually in New Mexico, they have what they call red wolves. And their whole deal is that's basically what they do, is they're thrill killers. They'll, you know, rarely do they actually eat what they'll kill. I mean, they might.
They get their meal for the day, and then the rest are killing shit.
It's just like they like to.
They'll kill to bring their buddies in to kill them.
Yeah, like they just like to go out and kill. I mean, they're a thrill killer. And
we need to get an actual like wolf biologist on this unit.
That'd be awesome.
Like that, and I'm so interested in like talking to like a mountain lion biologist
because there's
so much shit that we don't know.
Dude, I've heard in like Arizona too, like they've seen like where this is how far like the jaguar. I mean, the jaguar is an incredible animal, and they've seen some in like up near either Arizona or New Mexico is where they've been spotted.
And, really, a jaguar?
Yeah, they're coming
like
up
a
from
leopard.
Yeah, well, coming up from South America.
Through Mexico?
Yeah, I was like, man,
isn't
that's
there,
an
like
awful
Florida
lot of,
panther's a thing too, but that's not it's not a native animal to Florida, is it?
I thought it was. I
it's
thought
just
the
like
panther
bears
was.
In Iowa. I mean,
I thought the
spotted.
Florida panther was like a.
I mean, I'm a sex panther. I'm in Ohio, so I don't really
I mean,
there you go. That's
no, a thing.
I've seen that where they were like, yeah, it's
sex panthers.
Rolling her eyes.
Looking at you, Doug. Looking at you.
Maybe it's a real panther.
I know one in Iowa.
Well, and to me, that was wild.
I'll be honest, that smells like pure gasoline.
I mean, it was wild that he said, you know, one day they tracked this cat 33 miles. Now, do you think.
Think about that, dude.
Do you think that's what that cat was doing because it knew it was being followed or because that's just what it was going to do?
It knew it was being followed.
That cat
for sure knew.
Went back to two of his kills, and what they'll do is, like, we
found...
Oh, they'll
bury him, right?
Yep, yeah. We found a mule deer buck, a really nice buck, I'll add, that he put on the edge of this pond, actually, like, where, like, the dam would be. He dug a big hole and covered it up. He went back to that, ate some of it, covered it back up, and then went over to another kill, checked it, didn't look like he ate it, but just checked it to make sure it was there and nothing else had pissed with it and took off. So that cat knew he was being followed, but he was smart enough to know he was ahead of us enough to where he had time to go do that. So he was going to replenish himself nutrient-wise and body-wise. He was going to get a bite to eat.
He wasn't worried about shit, really.
Yeah, exactly. Well, he knew, like, I mean, and number one, like, the dogs are loud. Like, you know, you can hear 15 dogs from,
coming from
you know,
a while,
15 hounds, we'll say, from quite a ways away. So that cat knew he had time.
Well, but that's what I was curious about, too. When you said you tracked him for 33 miles, I was like, well, did he not hunt or eat during that time? You know?
Oh, no, he did. Where we got him was on day four is where the tide really turned back to us because he actually backtracked back into this valley. And it's the valley that this big drainage and valley that we started in. He actually had come back. He circled back into it. We cut old tracks, then we went back and cut new tracks, and it was early in the day. So that cat actually had went out and then looped back into this drainage. Yeah. And what that did was that told us right there that he wasn't super worried about us because he came back to us, and he was probably hunting or trying to come back to a kill that we just didn't find. But that gave us a head step. So instead of being, say, 15 miles away from him, by the time he realized we were down in that drainage too, now he's only a few miles away.
Right.
Now, on day five, we got to see him. We put him in a tree a couple times. So basically, we just kept wearing him down to where, you know, like, those cats are very territorial. So a lot of times what they'll do is, you know, they might work a 50-square-mile area, but they like to come back to what they know is home, and they like to, you know, they know where their kills are.
So that's where you can pattern them and say, okay, he's heading back this way.
Yeah, but
so
in
that's,
a 50-square mile, like, how did you not run into any other cats? Like, are they just that
very
dense or?
Very territorial? Very like the tom I killed was a very mature tom. He was a mature male. So they will fight off and defend, you know, 50, 60-square miles. Now, if there's a female in heat, you could run into three or four toms from other areas that smell her and heat, they come in. But realistically, they don't like to coexist with one another. You know, like
tomcats are the same thing. It's so crazy how like they're pretty much the same animal. Just
they're exactly the same animal. They are. They're exactly
bigger.
The same. Yep.
That's why people are like, why do you like cats? I like dogs, but I love cats twice as much.
Because cats are the ultimate predator, dude.
They're badass to watch.
I'll say they're the
even
ultimate.
A house cat. Like I can just, I'm picturing my house cat, the shit it does, and then
yeah,
multiply that into a mountain, like what you're saying.
Dude,
like,
I think about that shit all the time.
The square mileage, it's like at first it's like, oh fuck, man, like 30 miles, 50 miles, 60 miles, but it's really not that.
My cat is a stone cold killer, man. He's got
ten
mice, one baby rabbit, and one bat all in the house.
Just inside.
In the house. He's never been outside.
It's just, they're crazy. Imagine if a cat gets a hold of you, I would much rather get attacked by a canine, like a wolf, than a mountain lion.
Oh, yeah.
I've said it all. I mean, when I go on these solo hunts by myself out west, everyone always is like, oh, what about bears? What about wolves? I'm like, I don't give, in plain words, a flying fuck about that.
No, yeah.
What I don't want to run into is a mountain lion because you'll never know he's there.
No.
Like,
no, yeah.
He'll be, she will be on your back.
Broken neck.
Broken neck. And you literally won't even have enough time to go, ah. Like, I mean, you won't know. You literally, like a bear or a wolf, chances are you'll know.
Hear him, you're getting mauled.
You hear him.
You get mauled.
You'll see him. You've got a chance of not even being killed. You might be a paraplegic out there trying to eat leaves, but you don't even, I mean,
I feel like a brown bear bites your skull, you're pretty much done, though.
Well, at that point, it's over. But a mountain lion, if it attacks you, it's 100%. You're done.
That cat's going to be 5 feet away from you, and you're not even going to know it.
No.
Okay, you're never going to know it. You ever mess with a house cat? Like, you get them all roughed up, get them rough playing. I love doing this with my cat. And then they hit you. They grip your arm with their front legs, yep. And they hit you with the back legs. With their back legs.
Oh, they go.
Imagine
really
a mountain lion doing that to your torso.
It's over. It's over.
You fuck, son.
Yeah,
you're done.
You're fucking done, son.
Did you say your cat got a baby rabbit in your house?
In the house. I don't know how the baby rabbit got in.
Horrible
but
homeowner for letting baby rabbits in your house.
Well,
your resale value sucks ass.
Terrible.
You got rabbit holes all over that fucking thing, huh?
But that's like with the house cat, too.
The rabbit hole.
Unbelievable.
We'll wake up and the cat's sitting on top of the door. We don't know how he got up there. We didn't hear it get up there, but you wake up and he's just on top of the door.
He climbs up, I guarantee it.
Hey, doesn't your cat get in the freezer?
He loves the freezer. If you're getting ice out of there, like out of the ice bucket, he'll come up. He knows you're in there. You know, sit on the table and then jump in the freezer. And you can shut the door.
Dude, hey.
You don't give a fuck.
I want to ask a,
freeze him out.
I want to ask a stupid thing because I'm going to base all my hunting mountain lions off what cats do.
You're not going mountain lion hunting.
Do you think if you just run some running water or go near a fountain that the cat will like go to it? Because, dude, my cat...
I just put a big cardboard box out there and wait for one to jump
absolutely.
In.
Dude,
just get an Amazon package delivery of cat toys and throw them shits off to the side.
No, just a giant cardboard box and put it out in the middle of the field and he'll find it.
Oh, yeah, dude, no, because they love the boxes that shit comes in more.
That is fascinating.
I wonder if that would work, though.
There's a Western hunting podcast out there listening to a bunch of Flatlanders right now talk about mountain lion hunting. They're just laughing.
No, like, or they're probably yelling on the phone like, Jesus Christ, they figured out the secret, dude.
Hey,
get the boxes out. Get the boxes out.
Order my box, man. I need my box blind.
Dude, all of a sudden you go and like you start walking on their property. You see like a big ass tree with like some fat ass rope around it. Like,
that's a scratching post, bro. Yo, dude, just catnip is the secret of mountain lion hunting.
Dude, the guys are sitting in stands with, like, giant fishing poles with, like, big-ass, like, feather shit. All right, never mind. We're getting off the...
Here we go.
Cutting into it. Okay.
Here we go.
So Clint,
dude, cat owners are laughing their asses off right now.
Back to Clint's buck after, like, an hour. We'll just go with this. You were successful. You always are. You always kill big deer.
You killed that antelope, too.
57 yards, you said?
Antelope was that was a tough hunt. I was out there for 6 or 7 days in August and missed one at 78, hit one in the shoulder at 81. Just shots you got to be able to make, you know? I missed one, and then the one I hit, if I'm on the other side of the tennis ball, I smoke him. If I'm on the left side of the tennis ball, I smoke him. I hit the right side. I hit him square in the shoulder at 82 and just didn't get enough penetration. I mean, you know, broke that shoulder. We got to watch him. And I mean, we spent the whole day, me and Brian did, trying to track him, but just wasn't able to get it done. Didn't get enough penetration. You know, broke his shoulder, but that was it. Didn't get anything vital. So the rut comes along. I see the big six like 3 or 4 times. No shots. I'm basically hoping on standing beans and cold weather in late season. I mean, if I had a one time frame of the year to kill a big deer. Like if someone said, okay, you've got a 2-week span, you pick it.
It's a YouTube video or a Facebook Live video, and they're telling you how to get it done.
Yep.
This is what you're talking about right here.
This is it. I'm going to say I want end of December, early January, so you're about a month after the rut. You got these bucks that are worn down. They're hungry.
The coldest time of the year.
You and I Ross want, Bigger.
I want snow and cold. And what I got after Christmas was negative 10, negative 20, foot of snow. I mean,
are you in a stand or a blind?
No, I'm in a stand. I hats off to the guys getting it done in blinds.
Ground blinds suck, dude.
I mean, I love to be in a freaking tree. I love it. I can see. Yeah. I just, and it's painful. I mean, I remember.
I agree with you, but it's miserable.
I remember hanging freaking stands in December and January, and I mean, I'm taking my gloves off trying to put ratchets on, and it's so, like, I mean, your fingers are like bleeding.
Yeah, your hands get cold, and then you put it in a cold glove.
Oh, yeah.
They get so cold, they get hot.
So cold.
You know that feeling? Your fingers get so cold.
You know,
hot.
That buck.
It's probably frostbite.
Yeah.
I saw that buck twice in December, and then in January, it's crazy, on January 1st. So January 1st comes, and then again, it's like, hey, start the new year off, kill a big buck. Long story short, I have this buck come in, big six comes in at 5:20. So I got like 10 minutes of daylight, and he comes in, and I actually have a rabbit in a thicket down below me hopping around. He's making all this noise in this, and there was like 6 inches of fresh snow. So the rabbit cannot be seen by the deer, but I can see him because I'm looking straight down.
Right.
The does, there's like 20, 30 does a night coming pouring into this field, probably 5 or 6 other bucks, and then the big six,
Mm-hmm.
So all the deer are out. So there's like 35 deer in front of me. And they're all staring at this thicket trying to figure out what's going on. They can hear something moving around, but they can't see it. And I've got the big six in front of me at 17 yards. So, I mean, it's this smoke show now.
A lot better than 60.
I've got my, I got my bow up, and, I mean, I'm just waiting to get drawn back. But he's facing me. And he literally walks almost to the base of my tree. He gets, like, 7 yards, and he's staring at this freaking rabbit. But he still can't see the rabbit. The rabbit ends up, rabbits are constantly moving around. Well, he ends up, burrowing up out of the snow, and when he comes up out of the snow to get up out of this like little divot that he was in, he pops up and all this snow and stuff in these briars falls down because he's making all this movement.
Oh.
Every deer in the field freaks the shit out
because of a rabbit,
but they have no clue what it is. All they know is something come up out of the briars that they didn't know what it was. They all take off. So I'm like devastated. I mean, because in my head I'm thinking that was it, dude. It was minus 8. You had 6 inches of fresh snow. You had a north wind like you needed. Like you're on the verge of getting winded at any moment in time. Because like I said, I'm hunting winds that's good for him, not really good for me. But I'm trusting in putting my Sitka inside scent crusher. I'm trusting in my Ozonics. I'm trusting in this stuff to make it happen. Yeah.
Can I add a note in this? I want to get back to what you're saying. Our buddy Clark Cummings said like a wind that works for him, but still huntable is a quartering wind.
Oh yeah,
that's just something I want to add.
And you're trying to play that line of what's good for you, what's good for him, but more time than not, you've got to take a risk and play the caution of what he likes more so than what you like. But the problem with me was and people will be like, oh, that's a dumb thing to say, but I honestly had too many deer on that farm. And in late season, you don't want 50 deer coming to a field because that's 50 deer that's been hunted, that's winded hunters, they've heard rattling, heard grunting, they've been pushed by gun hunters, they've been pushed by muzzleloader hunters, they've been hunted by archery guys.
That's 50 more times you can get busted.
Oh, my God. I mean, and it's so when you get that perfect scenario of every deer's in front of you, you're not going to get winded. Nothing got behind you. And here he is at 7 yards.
Yeah, you're yanking your bow back at any time you want.
And it was just, I remember walking out that night and getting to my truck and I always get dressed and get undressed out of my truck. I get my scent crusher bag out and everyone knows I'm a huge scent freak guy. So I remember getting in my truck and heading home and my dad called and he was like, hey, how'd it go tonight? And I remember just being so pissed. And I remember him being like, well, that's good. At least you saw him. And I, like, freaked out. I'm like, you don't freaking understand. You can't have this buck that close to you. Like, you can't have a seven-year-old buck at 7 yards and not kill him. And mind you, this is, like, the third time now I've had this buck in shooting range and have not been able to kill him.
Right.
I mean, I've hunted at this point now. I'm at, like, 90-plus days of hunting basically this buck and not getting – I haven't even drawn my bow back yet.
So at this point, you're basically cussing every rabbit on the planet.
You smoked that rabbit,
didn't you? But then again
– it was just like – it was –
I fucking hate rabbits.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. But in my head, I'm like, okay, so now I'm turning back to, okay, what's the weather doing the next week? What's the moon doing? Just the stuff that I'm always cautious about. So the next week rolls around, and it's the second week of January. So it'd be like the 7th through the, 13th coming up. On the, I believe it was the 8th of January, I had a really bad wind. And I'm like, okay. I'm like, I'm going to go. And, it was funny. Like, this buck, he wasn't hitting this field as much as I thought he should be with this. Because, I mean, it had been, like, negative temps for, like, 2 weeks.
Well, he should have been craving proteins.
Well,
hard.
He should have been hitting more in daylight than he was. And I felt like he was somehow getting tipped off. I didn't know if it was my entry and exit or – something,
I remember you telling me about
something
this
was going
thing.
On. So I said, okay, I'm going to take my spotting scope, and I'm gonna sit from afar. I'm going to glass this field tonight, and I'm going to see what happens. So north wind, here we go, north wind. I get on a different vantage point. I literally watch this buck get up out of his bed. Now, where I was glassing is totally different from where I'm hunting because, where I'm hunting, the way I had to come in and come out, I could not get on this vantage point or I'd be seen. But I snuck in early enough on this night where I wasn't really worried about it. I was like half mile away.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm literally relying all on my spotting scope to do my work for me. I watched this buck get out of his bed, a spot that I really honestly didn't think he was bedding.
Did he see you at this point?
No.
Okay.
Nope. He got up, stretched, pissed around, headed to the field. And in my head, I'm like, this buck might be able to see me. He might be seeing me walk into this field. I had to cross the saddle, and when I crossed the saddle, I dropped down into this field and went down along this tree line. And in my head, I'm like, okay.
That skyline's where he's going to see you.
Well, where it was is when I went over the saddle and come down the next side.
The second Mana Cooler segment brought to you by Steve.
Dude, we're almost out of beer.
Get two manas.
Hey.
I was like, okay, I think when I cross this, I go up over the saddle and I drop down. From where I saw him get out of his bed that night, it wasn't where I thought he was bedding. And I'm like, this buck might be able to see me some nights when he's bedded there walk into this tree.
So he was already knowing what
the hell
was going
on. Well, at that point, I'm thinking, if this deer knows that I'm, let's say he sees me once a week do this, he knows something's going on. Like, he knows I shouldn't be there,
Mm-hmm.
So I said, okay. I watch him walk into the field. I got 35 minutes of daylight. I did something I've never done, ever, especially late season because deer are so touchy.
Oh, yeah.
I said, okay. I said, I'm going to drive around the backside of this farm, and I'm going to walk into where this buck's bedded. Now, mind you, all the deer are out in the field. I'm coming in the back door.
Right.
I'm going into where this buck was
bedded.
You're
not jumping deer at this
point. No. Him and everybody is in the field. They are not going to see me. I said, okay.
But you
did
your homework saying that all the deer are in that field already. So
there was like 35 deer. Yeah, exactly. Everybody that was out of their beds, normal deer I was seeing, was in that field.
Right.
I said, I'm going in the back door. I'm walking into that bed, and I'm literally going to look and be like, okay, what is this buck seeing? How is he beating me at the game I'm playing?
Right.
I literally am standing in his bed, and it was plain as day.
You got ahead of him.
I was walking in, I was going up over a saddle, and when I was coming down the next side, if that buck was paying attention and looking in that direction, he could see me go down the other side of this saddle, and then once I got to the tree line, I was hidden. But for about 40, 50 yards in that gap,
he could see you.
He could see me.
Yep.
Now, not every time was he facing that way to see me, but right. I guarantee you at least a couple times, maybe a week, that buck knew I was there.
You know how they are with their peripherals, though. As soon as they see one little twitch, they
And that's why he was getting to me so late. The times I would see him, it was so late. I got 10 minutes for him to come across the field. I got 5 minutes. And it's because all the other deer were getting there.
He had
there.
You patterned.
He knew something was going on. He didn't know every night, but he knew I was in the – so I said, okay. Mm-hmm. I said, I got to switch up my entry and exit. And, I mean, anyone that listens to me or reads what I write, I'm huge on entry and exit. Because if they see you or you tip them off, it's game over right off the rip. And that's what this buck did. This buck honestly was getting to me late because he was nervous. Because it was so cold and because he was so hungry, he was still moving during daylight,
yeah.
But he was not getting to me in time where I had enough time to actually be able to kill him because he was nervous. And that's why when he'd enter the field, it would take him an hour to go 100 yards, whereas every other deer would literally be there in 5 minutes.
Yeah,
right. But where right. he was bedding by himself, and this is what's so funny about these big bucks, and it's, you know, I'm constantly learning stuff every year I hunt, and this buck taught me a lot. He would always end up teaming up with five or six does. But these five or six does were bedding down below him in a creek bottom. He was bedding up on a ridge. He was bedding up on a ridge because he could see literally more than they could. And he was able to see me. So when
he could see down that ridge and the other side.
And when he would team up with them, he'd let them walk out in the field, like a lot of big bucks will do.
Yep.
The does would all come out. They'd feed. He would be on the edge. Once they got to the middle of the field, at that point in time, if they hadn't picked anything off, he knew he was safe.
He'd feel comfortable.
He'd start to feed up too. And that's what kept tipping me off is I'm like, why will he not just come across this field? He knew in his head.
Something was over there.
Something was over. Yeah. So long story short, I switched stands. I totally move to the other side of the field. Now I'm really cutting the wind. I mean, at this point.
It's almost not good for you.
At this point, I'm honestly pressing as hard as I can. Like, yeah. It was almost to where you're like siding with the edge of you're going to cut yourself.
Yeah,
it's insanity.
But, you know.
Scent control.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like I just didn't have a choice. So the January 13th, first night in this new set, I had the right wind. I go in and at 4:30, this buck's on the field. An hour and 10 minutes before daylight, or before it's dark, sorry.
He's out there early.
Yeah, at 4:37, I kill this buck. Now, mind you, I hadn't, this buck was not on that field killable. Probably the earliest was like 5:15, 5:20. So we're talking an hour. But for a week, 10 days, that buck had not seen me come up over that saddle. He had no, you know, so in his head, yeah. It was
done and over with.
So he got comfortable again, yep. Where he knows he's safe.
Yep. That just goes to show at this time of year right now, guys are shed hunting in spots that normally will not walk all season, all summer, all fall. Stand in those spots, and this is something I'm going to do now that you bring this up, because it's something that you don't really think about in a conscious way, is to stand in a spot where a deer is bedding and look to where you walk in, or where you think a deer is bedding. And then look over to where you're going
to
walk in.
See every access point to be like, okay, if he's laying here.
Can he see me?
He can see you from every direction what you come from. So then that's where you strategize and say, okay, I need to come from this way or come in a different way.
Clint's taking a pee break, everybody, just so you know. We're like, everyone, why did Clint step out and it's all quiet now?
Yeah, exactly.
I got to do it.
Hey, no.
That's a good point, though. Shed hunting, you can go in those more fragile areas because you're going through looking for antler. And if you can stand there and see where you walk in, it's from their bedding, it's probably not a good thing.
No.
Right.
You know what we should do? We should totally, when he gets back, we should totally switch up the whole podcast and talk about if he believes in Sasquatch or not.
No, everyone switch seats.
That'd be fun.
Chinese fire.
No. Let's not do that. We're going to have off mics. No, let's just start talking about, like, and he'd be like, no. I was, like, really there, and I look up, and it just in the sky, dude. And it, like, it was lit up, and then it just took off.
Just see what he does.
Are we doing this shit? Yeah, we have to.
This is a decent podcast for a Friday night podcast. We'll close her up here.
Why are we whispering?
Where is he?
I don't know. Shh. He's probably taking a.
I feel like he can hear us. Is that a good idea, Sam? Sam's in the studio here. I'm going to give her the mic.
So is Danielle, my new girlfriend.
She's like, fuck you, Steve.
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing.
Hey, piss off, Lou.
Hey, see that? Look at that. A woman's touching me.
So Clint's in town for the working class bow hunter party, which is tomorrow. At Eric's house. We do it every year, the working class bow hunter garage
bash.
Good
time.
It's kind of open to the public.
I mean, if you want to come, just let us know. You can come. I don't give a shit.
Yeah, we'll fit as many people as we can in the garage in Eldridge, Iowa. Fancy Eldridge, Iowa.
Yep.
It's like three times as nice as Sherrard, Illinois will ever be.
Okay, so yeah, dude, and then I'm like looking up like right in the sky. Dude, it's It's right above me. I'm sitting there in the stand. I cannot believe this shit. And I'm looking right up at it. Dude, and like all of a sudden there's like two other lights that pop up from it and it just takes off.
Did it have lights shining on you or anything?
Dude, I'm freaking out, dude. And like I went, because when I told you guys it was hovering, I went to where that was because like I had to get down. I'm like, dude, what the fuck was that? It spooked everything out of there. And there was like three burn marks where it landed.
So the 200 deer was in the field and this UFO thing or whatever it was hovering above you. And scared this deer off and then took off out of the way.
Well, because it made this goofy-ass noise, dude. And make? I'm like, I'm freaking out, huh?
What does the noise make it?
What kind of noise did it
Wait
make?
Wait a minute. I leave to go take a piss. We're talking about UFOs now?
Did you never have that happen? Have you ever seen
it? Never had that happen?
Someone filmed
it. Happened to all one of us.
Is that an Iowa, Illinois thing?
Steve had a 200-inch deer in the field, and this thing started hovering over the field and scared it off.
Yeah, dude, I'm sitting there, and it's getting close to dark, and all of a sudden I look up, like I see something bright, and I look up, and there's object in there, and it like it the an deer object. Spooked he was out of there, and then it like kind of landed, and I checked it, dude. There was like three burn spots.
How many mushrooms did you eat before this?
I didn't, dude.
You have to lie to me, we're all friends here.
No, I was gonna pull my phone out, but by the time I thought, dude, when I tried to pull my phone out, it was gone that quick.
We're such good friends, me and Doug are holding hands right now under the table.
I know you are.
I'm just saying. I mean, we're doing like, the whole podcast. You don't have to. What are you talking about? You don't have to lie,
dude. No, I
Clint didn't skip a beat. He walked in. I wish this was a video podcast because Clint's face is like, "What the fuck are they talking about in the background?" He's like, "Yeah, 200 deer is what tipped it off." He's like,
"Yeah,
that's and all of a sudden
the whole UFO thing didn't do anything." But I was like, "Yeah, no. Steve had a 200-inch deer
bullshit.
In his field."
I'm like, "No,
UFOs, yeah, but Steve didn't see a 200-inch deer."
No,
Clint, do you believe in Bigfoot?
In Bigfoot?
Yeah.
Sasquatch.
No. Not at all?
Not at all.
Do you believe in aliens, though?
Aliens?
My wife has said, you know.
God. Here's why I don't believe in Bigfoot. And this is my. This
my
is,
wife wants to say something about Bigfoot real quick. Okay, no, she doesn't. She
say
doesn't.
It.
Well,
Sam, do you believe
all the
in Bigfoot?
Hunters and.
Say it, don't spray it, brother.
Like all the hunters and trail cams and. I just feel like if it was real.
No
there'd
shit,
be like,
dude.
There'd be like legit.
But like, didn't they just discover a new species of orangutan, like, last year?
Yeah, but they don't have trail cameras over there.
Yeah, but have you heard that Bigfoot can't get a picture of him? Cause
he knows technology,
yeah, he knows
dude.
Technology too much.
Oh, shut the hell up, dude. Yeah, I got to go.
Wait, you don't believe, do you believe in Bigfoot, Steve? I'm assuming no.
Okay, Bigfoot, no. Aliens, 1,000%, yes.
Aliens
because I saw UFO.
Alien.
Chasing his 200-inch deer.
Dude, that's some bitch. That's why all the deer are. That's why I don't kill big bucks, dude. Them fuckers keep getting abducted. Their antlers get cut off, and I don't know.
Steve had an alien shove a thermometer in his ass.
Unbelievable.
It's like, dude, wait. I thought you guys were like modern aliens. Why is this a Walmart brand thermometer? What the hell are you guys doing?
Oh my God! Nobody. Will
they're
get
rascally. Okay. They're rascally critters. I don't know. I'll tell you what.
They're rascally.
No, well, I don't believe in Bigfoot at all. Because like Clint said, what? Dude, there would be a trail cam photo. Dude, there's trail cam photos.
I would have to agree with
dumber
Steve
shit.
On this
okay,
one.
Hold on, Doug. Do you believe in Bigfoot or not?
Hell yeah.
Yes. Me too. Okay, this is why I believe in Bigfoot.
Were you just that was like a cheerleader shit right there.
Yeah.
Woo! Hey. Yes.
All right.
Go, team, go.
All right, hey.
The wilderness is so vast and so much has not been explored.
Now,
and the fact that they're still like figuring out new.
In the United States, though.
Let me spit my case, dog.
All right, let's hear it. You're wrong,
but
okay.
I'm not saying that there's Bigfoot like by the. I'm not saying there's 50 Bigfoot in Illinois because I definitely wouldn't believe that. I don't believe there's any Bigfoot in Illinois. But I believe like somewhere in Alaska, in the wilderness of Russia, maybe South America somewhere, any like in the like jungle type environment or mountainous environment, there used to be
Gigantopithecus.
That was a real thing. That was a living Bigfoot.
That's in my pants.
To say good one,
because you just took a gigantic
beer.
So let me call this. If that thing was existing today and someone found it, you'd be like, oh yeah, it's Bigfoot for sure. That's what Bigfoot is,
dude. Would you not eat those backstraps?
You can pretty much say Bigfoot existed, right? Do you know what I'm saying?
What the fuck?
Yeah, dude. I would if I shot Bigfoot, I would eat those backstraps.
No. Are you getting what I'm saying though? If that animal existed right now, if you found him, be like, oh yeah, that's Bigfoot for sure.
Yeah.
Think that there's not some weird species between a gorilla and what a Bigfoot is. Like if you found something bigger than a gorilla and it stood upright, is that not Bigfoot?
Yeah, you call it a grizzly.
You don't think
bear.
That's possible? Imagine, but their population's way less.
I mean, dude. All right, so
do you know what I'm saying? Do you think that's not possible?
No, but check
at all?
This shit out. But the population of the silverback gorilla is only like 30,000. We know them motherfuckers exist.
Yeah, but imagine
there ain't a lot of them.
What if the population's only 200?
You think 200? So who's how many
if
chicks?
If a cat can cover 60 square miles in a breeding season,
how many chick?
Why
flicks?
Couldn't an intelligent orangutan have a breeding territory of 300?
How many
square
kids
miles?
Are they going to have?
One, probably one or
you
two.
Gotta like a, you got to think they're maybe, like a humanoid, so they're going to be subject sometime? To human-like
if
diseases.
If they breed at all.
So for 200 of them, how long is their lifespan? Because you got to think about this.
You say with confidence you think there's zero anything. You think there's 100% zero possibility that there's no Bigfoot at all ever. There's not one right now on the planet at all ever.
Look at T-Rex.
I'm cool.
He ain't around.
Okay, yeah. Here,
yeah, but that's different,
I
though.
Will say with 100%
T-Rex is a
confidence.
Giant. Like
because
dinosaur.
Finding Bigfoot has
look,
been
Bigfoot's
on
a giant
TV.
Get in here. Yell at Steve with me.
Finding Bigfoot
Steve,
has been on television.
Idiot.
Yeah, but those guys are fucking jokes. Those guys are fucking jokes.
Oh, they're not real Bigfoot hunters because they sold out?
Listen, they're
not the nitty-gritty.
Damn, I almost said some shit that would have got us in some big, big trouble. Those
working
guys
class Bigfoot hunters.
Okay. I got to regroup myself because I'm going to let it slip. Those guys are the fucking... They're not hunters, man. They are not hunters. They're going out there going, hey, I'm going to bang a baseball bat off a tree.
I'd be like, okay, here. It's like,
whoa. Dude,
yeah.
They're the Instagram huntresses of Bigfoot.
They're the Steve of Bigfoot hunting.
Yeah, they're
go
the
out
like,
in the woods.
Yeah.
A bunch of loudmouth jackasses.
Yeah, pound the 2x4s together.
If a dude, here's the thing. People are going to think I'm crazy after this, but I don't think there's like a vast population. I think there's a very strong possibility. But think, like, until a dude's like, hey, I play the wind, this is where
I think.
You have to, right?
You would, yeah. Well, I don't know how good it is.
Imagine whitetail hunting. You'd have to be such an extreme motherfucker to find a Bigfoot.
What do those big bastards eat? All right, now let's think about this. All right, so
if the dude from Survivor Man has a Bigfoot encounter, that dude seems highly intelligent. I got to think there's something to it. You know what I'm saying? I just think there's a stronger possibility.
Well, think of it like a mountain lion, all right? You gotta use dogs to find a mountain lion, right? You'll never find them.
So nobody's figured that shit out? Nobody's figured out how to hunt a Bigfoot successfully?
Well, no, I haven't tried to hunt one yet. I'm gonna go hunt one now.
But imagine that.
I'm going with you.
Clint on it.
Say there's 50 of a certain species that exists.
I'm going on. I'm going
and it's in like vast wilderness in northern, or it's in Russia and northern Alaska where we rarely go.
Extreme cold.
Extreme cold or mountainous, like high elevation or deep. Thick timber. You think there's zero possibility that a bigger ape could exist?
I'm going to go with, again, 100% yes, they don't exist.
Damn. I just,
I'm sorry, man. Dude, I believe...
You
I
worded
believe
that so badly.
I believe that Nessie exists over...
Oh, get the fuck out of here.
I believe the Loch Ness Monster over Sasquatch.
And the Loch Ness Monster lived in a fucking lake, though. In the
Do you
ocean,
know how deep
I believe
the Loch is?
I don't care.
You look at the lock. Look at that. Because
you know how big the Earth is compared to this. How deep a fucking lake is?
Nobody, dude. You can't.
It's probably the same possibility of existence, right? In the ocean, yeah, I can see there's some sort of big, like giant squid or giant octopus.
Well, there's giant squid, yeah, but not like the the big motherfuckers taking down boats. But so you really believe?
But there could have been at one point, right?
At one point, yeah.
Clint's staring off into space right now.
I'm mad at Steve right now because he just completely
I'm thinking.
You're trying to think of how to hunt a Bigfoot.
He's
thinking
how I'm trying to figure out how I can DIY public land a Bigfoot. Yeah, I'm trying to. I'm on
dude,
it.
That's like the best YouTube channel ever. You got my 2x4s.
Here's the thing. Maybe deep down, I just think the idea of Bigfoot is cooler than
actual
Bigfoot.
Oh, it's awesome.
Bigfoot.
Yeah, dude. Because if there was actual Bigfoot and it was only like 6'6" rather than 8'6",
here's the thing.
Be disappointed.
I think there's a very strong possibility that a Bigfoot exists.
Have you seen the Tim Wells video?
I have not.
You haven't seen it?
Tim Wells from like right over here? Tim Wells?
No, lives, Tim Wells, the hunter.
Yeah, he lives right by us.
Yeah, Relentless Pursuit.
Yeah.
You haven't seen this video?
No, well, what is it?
It's where he catches a Bigfoot.
Catches a Bigfoot?
Well, on video.
I've
never seen it.
No,
there are some drone videos.
We'll have to look it up now when we're done.
Hey, you know who's thinks they've seen a Bigfoot is our good buddy from Starved Rock Outdoors, Jordan Hubinski.
Yeah, he told that story.
He
on
was
the podcast.
Sitting in this room and he told us that. And I go, "You're a cop." I go, "You're a cop, right?" And he goes, "Yeah." I go, "Anyone, if you ever get pulled over, just know that public record." He said I was speeding. He also said he saw a Bigfoot.
He had six fingers on each hand. He had beautiful hair.
Okay, that's the credible witness. So that's what you're basing it off of. That's the credible witness.
We're going to shut this down right now. I wanted to yell at Steve about Bigfoot for a while. Clint doesn't believe in Bigfoot.
Clint, you don't believe in Bigfoot?
Not until
we
find him.
We haven't had that in a while where you actually break Steve down.
Eric.
It's hard. It's just...
Wait, Eric.
I mean, you make valid points. I mean, Kurt does make valid points, but it's just, it's hard.
It's hard to believe.
It is. It's hard to believe because there's so many hunters and there's so many people out in the wilderness that
the thing
you
is, like,
think.
Now, if you could tell me that Bigfoot lived in the ocean, I'd believe it 100%.
When you were hunting mountain lion, 100%. Did you see another hunter anywhere?
Yeah.
Damn it.
Yeah, but how many?
Oh, damn.
Fuck.
Only two.
What were they hunting?
Mountain lions.
One guy was running a Bigfoot. Trap line, and one guy was hunting.
Yeah. Bigfoot?
Mountain lion hunting,
yep.
So what if...
Were they on another mountain lion?
Did the dogs fight each other or what?
Okay.
No, I mean, his dogs were actually like way far away. We actually crossed because he was on an old track coming back, and we were on the fresh one, but he was actually on the same cat, just an old track. But his dogs were way behind, so...
You didn't tell him this is our cat, did you?
I mean, he pretty much kind of assumed.
I have a theory. The Earth is flat, and Bigfoot lives on the other side of it. When we go to look for him,
oh, he lives on the upside down.
Son of a bitch!
I'm gonna pack my bags on Sunday. I'm gonna go hunt his ass.
Dude, hey, wait,
kills one.
We don't hear from Clint.
What side of the Earth does he live on? Heads or tails?
If Clint kills a Bigfoot after we go home, I'm beating the fuck out of you, Steve.
I'm bullshit.
On record. Everyone hears that.
All right, then I'm whooping your ass, and then I'm eating that Bigfoot backstrap.
Dear God.
This took a deep turn. We better close her out now while we're all still having fun.
Dude, Clint, thanks for making the journey. We haven't even cracked the beer of... we've cracked a few, but... Dude, man, thanks for making that drive. It was funny. We pulled up at the same time. I was like, oh, there's Clint.
I looked in my rearview mirror, and all I could think about was... Sex. I was like, there is Steve.
Look
there
at sex
is.
Driving that 99 gold Silverado with
like,
233,000.
I mean, you look sex good appeal. In pictures online, but in person, you are the panty dropper.
So much more to love.
I would hate to see the amount of women that lost their virginity to you in high school. I mean, it's probably a very large number.
Yeah, you're going to hate
I'm jealous of them. I wish I was one of them.
It was quite an experience to be had.
By no one.
By one.
By one.
I only lost my virginity once.
Well, I love you regardless.
Okay.
I expected you to be taller, though. I'm sorry.
You did?
Yeah.
God dang it.
My bad.
God dang it.
Dude, when I went to hug you, I'm like, oh, we're the same height. I
Christ.
Feel bad for this guy.
God dang it.
Steve, we're going to close it out now.
Yeah, we have to.
Tell me something positive.
Something positive. Dude, we live in a world where Bigfoot doesn't exist.
I knew
that. That makes me feel good.
How's that positive? It's negative. Huh?
Dude, do you really want giant apes walking around?
Yeah.
That'd be so fun. All
right, so Doug, tell me something positive.
Sheds are dropping. Go find them.
Okay, I thought you were going to do the Bigfoot thing.
Eric?
I don't know. It's Friday night. We're drinking Bush Light.
Hey, I'll tell you something positive.
We've borne this out.
I'll tell you something positive. Magic Johnson's blood. Like 15 years ago.
Dude. Come on, dude.
What the fuck?
I was
positive.
I thought this podcast was a disaster because of Bigfoot, and you just really buried her in.
That was fucked up.
123.
Come on, it's not positive anymore. Oh,
we're
come
speaking
on.
Speaking of positive stuff, Danielle's pregnancy test positive.
Oh. Wait, how many beers has she drank? Edit that.
Okay.
Steven.
I'll end with this. This podcast is over, and tomorrow's a working class bow hunter podcast party.
Is that the best you got, Kurt?
So pumped.
Look for Snapchats, maybe.
Yeah, there'll be Snapchats.
Ooh.
Up.
Here's I get my mount tomorrow.
Well, there's some positive.
Doug gets his positive.
Positive. That's positive.
Sam, you got anything positive?
Go ahead and say something. Here's something positive.
Say a little something to the camera.
I'm about to kick Steve's ass. Go shoot your bow. We love you. No.